This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 108 for November 15th, 2007. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm your host, Dan Stapleton, and with me today are Chuck Osborne, our senior executive editor.
Hello, everybody.
Logan Decker, our senior editor.
Hello.
Norm Chan, our Killing Box columnist.
Hi.
Gary Witta and Jeremy Williams, our producer.
Hey, how come Gary doesn't get to say anything?
That was pretty harsh,
was that?
Man.
Gary has
that
said enough.
That was harsh.
That was nice.
It wouldn't be a Dan Stapleton podcast if you didn't forget someone.
Yeah,
either in the beginning or the end.
Anybody. I just neglected to give him a chance to speak, and he will more than make up for any misspeaking in this little segment in the rest of the show, I assure you.
Okay.
So, guys, I apologize, but I'm sure you will have plenty to say for yourself this issue or this show.
Right.
And now he's not speaking to me. Okay.
We are a charming bunch, though. You introduce each one of us, and we're just like, hello.
Yeah.
Hi.
Yes.
Hi.
Everyone else disappointed me, so I figured I'd just skip that. Okay.
What?
And on with the show.
Okay, so this exciting episode, we've got, well, first of all, we should say that our holiday issue is now on stands with the Crisis review cover.
Woo!
Yay. And I guess by now most people probably already know what we gave it. But
101.
I have no idea. What did we give it?
this is a Chuck Osborne special review.
I was wondering why I was so interested in it.
Yeah. we said last week that we were going to hold off on Crisis discussion until this week when it was actually out. But I guess Gaz and Jeremy, you still haven't played it, right?
It's not out. It doesn't come
out. It is out.
It has shipped. No,
it is. We were actually just at a GameStop and it was on the shelf.
Is that right?
Holy,
we'll talk about that.
They had it.
Dun dun dun.
Two versions.
Yep.
Where it was located, it broke my heart. Wow.
Yeah. We just went to lunch at a mall and there was a GameStop there. And you know,
there was
they
something else there.
The brand new Crisis game that just came out was about 6 inches above my shoe at the bottom of the rack.
You're lucky they have a PC section because mine doesn't have a PC section.
That was the part of the game. We were going to go to the GameStop and, you know, see who could spot the PC section first. It was going to be a hunt for the PC section.
Well, they did have a highlighted PC area. No, it was half of one of those kiosks in the middle of the room, or not middle of the room.
Half a rack.
Yeah,
half a rack.
And then there was a wall too. There was this is a step up.
No, not an entire wall. About what, a foot maybe a foot
no,
wide.
It was five feet wide.
It was not five feet wide.
It fit about 10 games.
Yeah, ten games across
side
was,
by side.
Yeah,
and
it was
a full wall with PC games. So
there were a bunch of DVDs and Xbox games. Those were not all PC games.
This reminds me of my childhood when I used to go to Crown Books to buy video games, and Crown Books had this shelf of like 10 games, you know, at the most, and the rest, of course, were books. Only now, instead of books, it's all console games.
Yeah. But the thing was, we were really disappointed because, you know, we're checking out the games on the wall, which we thought would be the most prominent games, the best new games. And they
Barbie
had
Island Princess had a great placement.
It did?
It was up
there
on the wall. Mm-hmm.
You know, but it had Call of Duty, had, you know, Cubby of Heroes, but what wasn't there was
Cubby of Heroes wasn't on the wall. Cubby of Heroes was not on the wall. It was on the rack.
It was on the wall, twice on the wall. There was a pack, collector's edition, and the new Opposing Fronts was on the wall. You just didn't see it. But Crisis was not there, and we went back to the rack, and Crisis we found on the lowest rung of the rack at the very end of one of the rows.
Yeah, I just got the impression that the GameStop employees don't know, like, what's the big what the big games are, because they just seem to give priority to like little dinky things that had been out for months and months and didn't, you know, pay any attention to them. It's very sad.
Well, more than likely they're not PC gamers. So that they probably don't know.
No, they're too busy, you know, putting Rock Band, receiving copies of Rock Band and yeah, storing it in there.
Well, then again, I went to EB Games a month ago and said, are you guys going to get a demo copy of Rock Band in? And he said, what game?
Oh. So, wow.
Yeah.
Norm nearly attacked one of the UPS delivery guys delivering some Rock Band crates, which I found extraordinarily sad, but whatever.
The crates, the boxes were sitting on carts with wheels. We could have wheeled one out.
I'm sure nobody would have noticed. Now, if we had known about this ahead of time, like one of us could have gone to Goodwill and bought like a UPS outfit, and then we could have actually tried to sneak off with it.
What a move!
Anyway, and you know, just for the record, Norm, how much do you like Guitar Hero for the PC?
The review's not out yet.
Yeah, but
so I've declined to say.
I'm not asking for the score, but you know.
Thumbs up or thumbs down?
I did not like it as much as some other people liked it.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah. So somehow I'm just not all that excited about Rock Band.
And that's not to say that I don't like Guitar Hero, because I love Guitar Hero.
I'm just not into the whole karaoke scene, I guess. That must be my problem. Anyway, so on back to the PC games that are selling. The new NPD numbers are out, and they have the top PC games selling. Guess what topped the list? Shockingly, not World of Warcraft, which is usually
or
up there.
Nancy Drew.
Yeah, and not The Sims. The Sims is also, you know, perpetually up there, but this was a extraordinary list in that it was number one was Hellgate, number two was Orange Box. Number three was Age of Empires, the Asian Dynasties expansion.
No, number two was Hellgate London Collector's Edition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one and two were Hellgate.
Yeah. And like The Sims and WoW were close to the bottom, which was shocking. I didn't think anything would ever really unseat those. But I guess the holiday season and a bunch of big games coming out is a nice, refreshing burst of new games topping the list.
I'd also like to point out that The Witcher was number nine, which I think is really cool because it's a brand new IP here in the United States. It's a single player RPG and it's doing very well. It's a game that's well worth picking up.
Yeah, all the reviews I've seen of it, except for like one where the reviewer didn't actually finish it, have really liked it. But I'm actually looking forward to playing that. I'm not a big RPG guy. I play some RPGs. I love Fallout. I loved KOTOR. But I don't play all of them.
Wasn't the American version censored?
Of The Witcher?
Yeah.
I heard that they may have toned it down a little bit. I think the European one has a little bit more sexiness to it. I'm not sure exactly what it is that they cut out, but I know they tweaked it a little bit for US.
Yeah, because our 17 plus gamers can handle all the blood and gore in the world, but a side boob might upset them.
That said, I believe that you can, as we put it in our review, you can fornicate with just about every woman that you meet.
Good to know.
So,
just like real life.
Maybe for you.
The Witcher is an Atari game, although not developed by Atari, and I guess there will be no future games developed by Atari.
Not in-house, no. Atari will now be just a publishing house.
Yeah, which is a dramatic change. I guess this Atari, or what is now known as Atari, they were formerly Info Games, right?
Infograms.
Whatever.
It's French.
Yeah, it's a French company. So, and then they bought up Atari and adopted the name. I guess they're initially, you know, developer publisher, and this is a big change for them. So, but like what? What was the last thing they actually developed in-house?
Atari?
Yeah.
I was actually trying to think of that, too. I'm not sure exactly what it is that they've developed in-house lately.
Yeah, so maybe it's not a big loss.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I know Infograms, I believe that they own Eden, and Eden's making the new Alone in the Dark game, which, you know, they're still going to be coming out with. So, you know, I guess that's going to be in-house, kind of. But, yeah, I don't know what else Atari's done.
Infogrames did the original Alone in the Dark, too, I think.
Right.
You'll still see Atari in all kinds of boxes because they're still publishing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's not, they're not going away by any means.
It almost seems like they're going the Dreamcatcher route and picking up a bunch of European games and bringing them over to the U.S. now.
But did you mention that their CEO quit? Because I recently read that.
Of
Atari, yeah. So it's certainly in flux. The company's not really doing that great at the moment, I guess.
Yeah, it hasn't been doing great for years, though. And it's been kind of a disorganized situation over there. And they had a bunch of staff shakeups and reorganizations that, you know, they keep trying to get back on their feet, they've just been off balance for years.
Nolan Bushnell should pull a Steve Jobs and go back there, bring it back to light. Give us some.
Well, except Nolan Bushnell isn't very happy with the state of games right now.
More reason for him to go back. Make it right.
Pong 2008.
Oh God.
Bleep, bloop.
It's a reimagining of Pong.
Mm. I think Rockstar did that.
Yeah, I guess that's true. The table tennis. Speaking of old developers doing new things, or I guess not really a new thing, but getting back to something, Interplay, who have pretty much been, you know, essentially dead for years, have been getting kind of feisty, and they have hired a former Fallout developer. Now they say in their press release that it is not to work on a Fallout MMO, which they do have the rights to through 2009, with Bethesda's approval. You know, Bethesda has veto rights over anything they do. They say they're still looking for funding for the Fallout project. They don't have it yet, so they're not hiring for that. But this is an unannounced MMO they're working on. Now, I'll believe it when I see it based on, you know, their website, which still looks like, you know, something out of 1997. And, you know, it's just like all text-based with one logo, and it's got a link to a chess game. It's kind of weird that they're actually hiring people at this point. But, I don't know, maybe they're going to stage a comeback. Because they did have a bunch of great IPs, and, you know, it's kind of a similar situation to Atari, where they put out a bunch of great games, and they just mismanaged the company, and it just kind of collapsed on itself.
Yeah. I would love to see a new Descent game.
Mm.
I think that could be really cool.
With updated graphics and the same kind of the same gameplay?
Yeah.
It'd make you sick all over again from all the...
it never made me sick. I've never been one of those people who suffered motion sickness from playing a game like...
Me neither.
People who did suffer motion sickness, did taking, like, you know, medicine help?
Yeah, it did. I would chew ginger, and that helped a lot of times, and sometimes I would take Dramamine.
Oh, wow.
But the only problem is with Dramamine, you have to take it before you get sick, or it doesn't really help you all that much, and next thing you know, there's little bits of barf in your keyboard in between the keys, and that's not, you know, traditional good time.
This Interplay site's a riot.
It is. Yeah, I know. I'm looking at it right now. If anybody out there wants a laugh and to remember, like, the heyday of what Interplay used to be, go to www.interplay.com and look at what Interplay is right now.
Oh,
because
play
it's
online chess. Self-support. Self-support.
Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, Interplay put out some of the games that I remember the best from the early 90s, like Descent 2, the Star Trek adventure
Out of This
game.
World.
Yeah,
Out of
that
This
was
World.
Awesome.
That's right.
Yeah.
MDK.
And how do they have all those great games that you know, didn't sell badly? You know, how do they have all those and still just collapse? I don't get it.
Mismanagement of funds.
Yeah. So, maybe they'll come back. We don't know.
Does anyone want to play chess online later? Just give me a ring.
Thanks. I'll skip.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, dude.
Know. Meet Logan at the Interplay website
for good times and chess. If you just woke up, well, here's a news flash.
http://www.pcgamerpodcast.com. Jeremy, scratch it like it was a rash. So there have been rumors swirling about the Marvel Universe Online game that Cryptic is working on, the Company of Heroes, City of Heroes developers. I always confuse that. City of Heroes developers. Jack, what do we know about that?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what's going on with this project. Supposedly, the rumor has it that the entire Marvel Universe online game may be canned, that Cryptic may not be doing it anymore. I know Next Gen posted a story about it this week, saying that they apparently confirmed with a highly placed source that it's going to be canceled by Microsoft. And it just seems unlikely because they just sold off the City of Heroes IP to NCSoft, and so, you know, logically you would think that they did that in order to work on Marvel Universe full time, and now it would seem sad for it to be, you know, just canned at this point. But since, you know, I'm not on the team, I don't know exactly what's going
on.
That's
just a rumor.
Yeah, it is just a rumor. Yeah.
And although they haven't come out and denied it either, so who knows at this point? We'll have to you know, look into it. But whenever there's, you know, business dealings at these companies, they really don't like to talk about it until something's confirmed. So unless somebody you know comes out and says something they shouldn't, that we won't know until there's something official.
And it's pretty touchy because, I mean, this is one of those games that they have to get absolutely right because they know that they're going to be going up head to head with, the DC online game. And mm-hmm. So if they don't get this exactly right, then they're not going to bring it out. And Microsoft has had a pretty bad time bringing out, online RPGs in the past. Mm-hmm. They've also been pretty willing to cancel a lot of them too.
Right. Over at Vivendi, there is a Ghostbusters game in development.
Woohoo!
Which the screenshot came out online, and it's the cover of Game Informer this month. They just did the logo with the Ghostbusters thing, and you know we had no idea this was coming. When Norm and I saw it last night, it was awesome. And you know they've got a screenshot on there. Which Norm, do you want to talk about this a little?
Yeah, it's Ghostbusters. It's published by Vivendi. They just announced a big deal with, I guess, Sony Pictures to license a bunch of products because, I guess, games like Scarface movies like Scarface turned to games have done fairly well. Not Halo 3 well, but they've sold, you know, made millions and millions of dollars for both the publisher and the movie studio. So the Ghostbusters movie, we know, is probably not ever going to come because the principal cast members are just a little too old now. But they're still just as funny as ever, and Dan Aykroyd had a script in the works for Ghostbusters 3, and I guess this is his chance to get that story out to the fans.
Yeah, and so the original talent is all involved with this project.
Well, the original four Ghostbusters are involved. There's no Sigourney Weaver or who is it, Rick Moranis just yet. But it is going to be a direct sequel to Ghostbusters 2, meaning it's going to be set in the early 90s with the bad haircuts and the fashion sense of the early 90s. But the one screenshot that was revealed online last night is pretty awesome. And at first I didn't realize it was a screenshot. It looked like a CG rendering.
Yeah.
But it is the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, the giant Stay Puft Marshmallow from the original Ghostbusters movie, you know, bursting out from the streets, and the Ghostbusters rappelling down to attack it from some helicopter or something.
The best part of this news to me is that Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd are writing the script.
Yes.
Which promises to be fantastic. And not to mention everybody's doing the voices, so it could be good.
You guys are a lot more excited about this than I am. I mean, I'm glad that they're bringing the old team back together, but I have a feeling that this might turn out to be more like the Simpsons game, you know, because that had a lot of the original people working on that too.
My fear, exactly, like you could have, you know, writing and art design can be great, and you can have a lot of involvement from the original creators, but it all depends on whether the actual game designers are up to the task. And the developers of the game are Terminal Reality. And if you go to their website, they developed the Blood Rain games. That's their claim to fame. And the Metal Slug anthology games, arcade games for 360. So their track record doesn't inspire that much confidence for such an ambitious game. But who knows? They could pull it off. I'm hoping they'll pull it off.
Yeah, I'd like to think that, you know, if the you know, creative team behind it has the amount of pull over it they seem to. I mean, like, it seems like if they get all these guys together, I can't imagine that VU like would be able to get all those guys together. It seems to me like they would have to go shopping this idea around. So if they're involved, like they seem like they are, maybe they'll have a little bit of influence over the game design, and you know, hopefully it will come out better. I mean, I'm optimistic about it just because the screenshot looks pretty, and hopefully.
What are the cool?
Well, I mean, we could get into a protracted, argument about that, but I mean, as much as I think Harold Ramis is good at making movies, or at least some of the movies that he's done, you know, he doesn't have a track record in making games. They're two very different mediums, and to hope that, you know, he would be involved in the game design side of it doesn't really say anything to me that it's going to be a quality product.
Well, that's not really what I meant. I just meant, that, you know, if he was going around shopping this to people, maybe he has some influence over the level of quality. You know, and I'm sure that, well, okay, I'm going way too much into conjecture here that they actually know what they're doing, but it's very wishful thinking on my part. I'll put it that way. I would very much like this to be a good game.
Well, we'll see
the cool gameplay
looks.
Aspects,
I mean,
though, that they did mention, is that the game will have co-op, possibly four-player co-op, you know, people playing as each of the Ghostbusters.
That seems like it should be a given, yeah.
And it's all platforms, across all platforms. So.
Yeah, that's one other thing that I'm a little skeptical about, is that it's also going to be coming out for Wii and PS2. And some companies, when they do the PC SKU, they do the direct PS2 kind of drag and drop. And I'm hoping
it's two separate developers. One is working on the next gen titles, and one's working on like the handheld ones.
Right. Yeah. So hopefully it won't be like Spider-Man 2, was it, that the PC got the really crappy last gen console port.
I haven't seen that happen in a while though.
It happened somewhat recently. I can't remember the exact game, but yes, it does happen.
It really sucks, especially when, I guess with Spider-Man 2, we were really pissed off about that because, like, we had no indication that it was going to be a different game than what the 360 and PS3 were getting. Or I guess it was just 360 at that point.
Oh, actually, Logan, most recently it's happened with almost all of EA's sports titles.
Right.
All the ones that have come out for the PC have been, like, older PS2 ports.
But yeah, so we had no indication that the Spider-Man game wasn't going to be the same thing the 360 players were getting. And we got it, and it, because like it had all that crazy web swinging going on that people were raving about. We get it, and it's this kiddie game that is just terrible. So it was a massive bait and switch that we really didn't like. In hardware news, and Logan, this one's for you, Mad Catz, which I guess they make a lot of peripherals for consoles, has acquired Cytec.
No! I love Cytec.
Why is that bad? That's not such bad news.
I don't know if it's bad. Actually, I haven't done any analysis on this, but I love Cytec as a brand, and I love all their peripherals for PC.
They do make good peripherals.
I just hope that this, them being incorporated in the Mad Catz doesn't mean that some of their innovative, you know, flight control sticks are going to be canceled, and they're not going to develop any more cool joysticks.
I also hope that they're able to keep the Cytec kind of cool look to their products and not make
kind of
kiddified the way that
exactly.
The Mad Catz
look. Yeah, their packaging is very plasticky. It's in the clamshell casing, but Cytec, it's always nice. You have the brushed aluminum or the fake rubber, the rubberized plastic.
Do you have any idea if they're going to rebrand everything Mad Catz? Or are they keeping the Cytec brand?
They haven't said yet. They'd be fools, though, I think, to drop the Cytec brand with such goodwill that it has. And, you know, PC gamers, I think, have a pretty good, it has a pretty good reputation with PC gamers. So why dump it, you know? Mad Catz with PC gamers? It's like, what is this cat business? You know?
those crazy cats.
Yeah. Honestly, I had never really heard of Mad Catz, but apparently they're big in consoles.
But you're not a console gamer, right?
Yeah, I don't play console games very much. So.
Well, as long as there's the distinction between the brands, then they'll probably keep the distinction between the look. so I wouldn't worry.
And Cytec's a big company, you know. It's not some little podunk operation they can just swallow up, you know. Mad Catz probably bought Cytec knowing that because it's a bigger company, it has better distribution, and it can make a lot more money distributing Cytec's products.
That's right. I see a lot of Mad Catz stuff in stores like Best Buy and GameStop, but I really don't see Cytec stuff.
Yeah, so they figure, you know what, they can just ride our distribution chain, and we'll make more money off the deal.
Isn't Cytec also one of the few peripheral manufacturers that they also make like their joysticks for the left-handed as well? Like you can.
You know, I haven't seen one of those for a while.
Oh, okay. Because they used to do that, and I know we sometimes get questions about, you know, well, what peripherals are there for left-handies, and I know Cytec had done some.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, readers, if you're left-handed and you have some favorite peripherals, email us at the podcast and let us know what they are.
Isn't Gary left-handed?
Is Gary still
left-handed? Yes.
Oh, you're still here. Good.
Yeah, shockingly, Gary, you haven't been speaking out as much as I thought you would. So maybe I should have let you speak at the beginning of the podcast. My mistake.
But readers, yeah, let us know what your favorite lefty peripherals are, and we'll spread the word.
So coming out today, there is a Universe at War demo, which is the new RTS from the developers of Star Wars Empires at War, and I guess Petroglyph is the studio name that essentially used to be Westwood. Westwood was bought up by EA and relocated to EA LA from Las Vegas. A lot of those guys didn't want to leave, so they stayed in Las Vegas and founded Petroglyph. So this is, you know, has a strong CNC lineage. It's also very, very asymmetrical. So each of the sides could essentially be from a different game. They're very, very different. They've got one side that's, you know, big stompy walkers, that, you know, huge super
big
units.
Big stompy walkers.
Yeah, those are always fun.
Is that what sets this game apart?
That's very British.
Big stompy?
Yeah, they do that a lot in the UK. They talk about big stompy robots.
I like big stompy.
Are you excited about this one, DJ?
I did the review for it. It's in our holiday issue that's on stands today.
You mean the one with the Crisis review on the cover?
The very same.
Wow.
Yeah. I did enjoy it. I won't give everything away, but I enjoyed it. I admire the asymmetry of it, as I said, because it's much harder to balance something like that, and they seem to have done a good job. I'm sure that, you know, once all the really hardcore people get a hold of it, they will figure out some exploits, and then they'll have to patch the balance. But that happens with every single RTS ever. So, you know, you can't really dock them for that. And they did a very respectable job of it. So, I'll be very interested to see, playing multiplayer around here. There was a lot of just very interesting, interactions between the sides because they're so different. Sometime either next week or within the next couple of weeks, there's going to be a Supreme Commander Forged Alliance demo coming out, which has the new side in that too.
Speaking of asymmetry, did you guys see the rumor that StarCraft may be a little closer to release than we thought?
It
was a rumor and kind of like hearsay.
Well, it's you know, based on a quote from a Blizzard exec saying that. That they expected StarCraft to come out before Lich King, so that doesn't mean that it's anywhere near release, or you know that it will be
one
before
of the yeah. One sorry. Of the employees said that he was working on titles that were closest to release, like StarCraft II.
Yeah, but closest to release relative to what?
Exactly.
Relative to Lich King. Lich King may end up getting pushed. So you know, it's Blizzard. they're not going to put something out before it's ready. And they haven't even shown off the Zerg yet, so I don't think they're anywhere near being ready.
Yeah, if I had to guess, it wouldn't be before summer.
Yeah, and that's early, considering. I mean, StarCraft 1 was delayed by almost a year because they were just playing it internally, just trying to get the balance right for a lot of that, and adding a few new features and things like that. But yeah, they are in no hurry, and they'll put it out when they're good and ready. So, and that's for the best, really. So games that are out now, SimCity Societies, Soldier of Fortune Payback, Kane and Lynch, all on shelves right now. We saw most of the, we didn't see Payback for the PC at GameStop, but.
But we did see that. What we did was see at the cash register as Chuck was paying for his Super Mario Galaxy.
Was, oh, busted. Oh, busted.
Was, a display for Soldier of Fortune. It was like Activision value display. It looked like one of those CD shelf racks that you spin around. And on one side were many, empty boxes with Soldier of Fortune Payback on it, and then on one another side it was Cabela's Big Game Hunters, and then on the next side it was Cabela's Bass Fishing.
Hmm, a prelude of things to come.
Well, it was originally going to be published by Activision Value. You know,
it was.
Yeah,
it was. But you know, it's even though it's published by Activision, all the game manuals and everything inside the game says it's developed by Activision Value.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing with Soldier of Fortune Payback is that it's $40 only for PC, but on next generation consoles on 360 and PS3 it's $60. So this is a game. If anyone's interested at all, if anyone liked the, you know, if they for some reason wanted to play it, which we're not saying it's not worth playing, you know, it's the PC would be the version to buy.
Hmm. It annoys me that they attached the Soldier of Fortune name to this, because it doesn't seem to be in any way related to the previous two games, except that, you know, it has a high level of gore.
But they're paying back, Dan. Don't you get that?
Are they paying back the Soldiers of Fortune?
Well, apparently they are, because now it's like a value game, except you pay $40 for it.
Wow. Hmm. What a value.
All right, so why don't we take some questions?
Logan Decker, Chris Robotic Comet Comiskey.
Uh-oh.
I just found.
I thought about it for a while, and I think
Dude,
figured it out.
Sounds like a robot.
Wait, whoa, what was that? Wait, let's listen to that one more time.
I think I
Dude,
figured it out.
Sounds like a robot. Like a robot. Like a robot.
Oh, okay, so I see. No, here's how it works. All right, guys, so it's pretty clear. Chris can't say robotic about anything, or it's like the end of the world. Oh my god, F you, kill the mic. But wait, but when Logan says this...
Like a robot, like a robot, robot, robot.
Yeah, that's cool, that's fine. No, I understand that, I see how it is. Guys, it sounds like you can't spell hypocrite unless you spell it L-O-G-A-N. Now testify.
Well,
he really took
like
that personally, didn't he?
I think it was a critique of my critique of his voice, which was that he was a bit robotic. But you notice how he like kind of amped up the sort of, you know, cadence of his voice in that response. He thinks he doth protest too much. It seems like he got an upgrade, actually.
What else we got?
Well, I could definitely say that Logan is not robotic, because last night when he called me crying.
La 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 la. Chuck is hysterical.
Because he left this tear-ridden voicemail on my cell phone because he couldn't be the boss in Crisis and wanted to know like what he was doing wrong, and what he needed, and everything.
That is, I wanted to talk about a boss.
You know, I don't have a lot of experience with enduring the crushing blow of personal failure, but. You know, I really felt for Logan. I really did. And so this is just...
I just wanted to talk about my experience with Crysis. That's what you want to do after a good movie, after a good game. You want to, you know, share what you've experienced.
Did the big bad spider scare you?
You know what? I crushed him like a f***ing dust bunny. Oh, wait. Sorry.
Oh, did he leave that?
the
no,
dust bunny
I
part.
Fought like a lion last night. And I beat Crysis.
On what level, right. Logan?
That was more lamb than lion.
What difficulty level, Logan?
Hard.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Liars.
Yeah. Hardly easy.
That's what y'all are.
Okay. What else we got, Jeremy?
Hello, PC Gamer. I thought I'd call in and ask you guys about your thoughts about Call of Duty 4. Call of Duty's always been a franchise that was really Hollywood-esque, and all their games have really not really been realistic at all. In fact, in all the Call of Duties, You kind of just run around killing hundreds of thousands of Nazis. And it just doesn't seem right that they're trying to touch the whole Iraq war with this whole topic. And it's just something that's really sensitive right now, and I just really don't feel like people should be already trying to make a play on this. And I don't think this game should be popular, and I don't think it's going to be popular. It doesn't look like it's going to be good to me. Everything in there looks like it's been done before. The whole bullet-piercing bullets thing has already been done in Counter-Strike, and the perks has already been done by Battlefield, and I just really don't think there's going to be a turnout. I thought I wanted to hear your guys' thoughts. Thanks very much.
Well, wasn't the gun with the trigger done in Doom? I mean,
No, he's talking about
you have something to say about this.
Walls.
Yep. First of all, Norm, this isn't set in Iraq, is it?
No, it's set. Well, first they don't say what country it's set in. It's set. The only country they do mention that's an antagonist is Russia, but not even the country. It's some ultra nationalist leader. Whenever you're in the Middle East, they just refer to it as the Middle East. They're intentionally vague because I guess they are aware that they want to be touchy on the subject. And nowhere is Iraq or Iran or other specific country mentioned. And unfortunately for this listener, the game is doing very well in terms of sales and reception.
He is right though that the gameplay is very samey to the previous Call of Duties, right?
Yes, it's exactly.
I got the feeling that they kind of amped it up though. I mean, there's like more to it, more explosions.
Oh, sure.
I'm talking about the gameplay though. I mean, Infinity Ward has always been very good at making you feel like you're part of a big kind of action movie kind of thing where there's all kinds of stuff going around you. But the core gameplay is always the same. It's very basic, shoot 'em up and you can take a lot of hits, and it's not supposed to be realistic. It's supposed to be an action movie kind of thing.
I kind of like the idea of a fictionalized game like Call of Duty. I enjoyed it immensely. I'm much more offended by the idea of ripping things straight from the headline and then a week later making them into a game.
Like Cuma War?
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, that's much more offensive to me, actually making something into an interactive shooter that actually happened on the ground.
Yeah, that was Dan Morris's big beef with them. Is like when Saddam Hussein's sons were killed in Iraq, they made a mission about that in Cuma Reality's Cuma War, the next week or so after that happened, and it was of course totally inaccurate. I mean, for one thing, we won't get into the details of it, but it was very inaccurate. It was very They added more action because it wasn't really much of a fight, that's much more tasteless. And Call of Duty is not referring to any specific conflict. It's a fictional thing. I don't think that it's going to offend anybody just because there are no references to real world events.
What about the World War II games? Do you think it's just been long enough that we're not offended by that, or are those
pretty much?
Do those have an element of being tasteless too?
I mean, if you really think about it, I mean, war is just not a fun thing. So any war game, and pretty really any game with violence against other people, if you want to go that deep into it, is going to be offensive on some level. It depends on what your threshold for offense is.
Hey, how's it going, everybody at PC Gamer? This is Eddie from the Greenlight Cafe podcast. Got a question. Call of Duty 4, do you guys know if it's going to be a multiplayer? Because for some reason I couldn't get any information on that as far as Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare being a multiplayer. I'm assuming it's not, considering all the everything that's been put into that game. So thanks for listening. Great show. Love you guys. Peace.
That's a pretty old question.
Yeah, we should say that's from a couple weeks ago. So do you want to talk just very briefly about what the multiplayer options are, Norm?
Sure, yeah. So I guess, his questions probably should be answered already since the game's out. But just to clarify, Call of Duty has a pretty robust multiplayer component because the single player is pretty short. For me, since I love playing multiplayer games, the single player is actually just a little bit of gravy on top of the multiplayer. And I know it's getting mixed reactions. Jeremy didn't like it that much, and Will didn't like it that much. But I really dig the multiplayer. It has some cool persistent stuff, stat tracking, kind of like Halo, where you increase in rank, and then you get to unlock new weapons. and it's like six or seven game modes plus a realism mode and arcadey mode. So it has and 15 multiplayer maps. So it's a pretty complete multiplayer experience.
And just to clarify, when Norm says you unlock weapons, it's not per game. You actually unlock your character over time the more you play the game. So as the week goes by or the month, you actually get more and more stuff.
Your multiplayer character is persistent, right?
Right. Yes, yes. Yeah. It's tied to your account and your screen name. So I just made, like, First Lieutenant, you know, a couple days ago, and I'm just trudging through earning experience points. It's kind of like grinding through an MMO, except instead of killing rats, you know, I'm actually deathmatching and playing some pretty fun, you know, capture and hold or headquarter game modes.
So isn't the persistent character thing, like, pretty much exactly like Battlefield 2?
Yes, except with Battlefield 2, there wasn't as much unlock, and you didn't get,
It's like Battlefield 2.
Except easier to increase, it's easier to go up in rank. The scaling has been done a little better, so, it doesn't take, you know, hundreds of hours of play just to get to officer status. I've seen people have like four-star generals already. But I do like the feel of the weapons. And there are a lot more weapons.
Okay, playlist time, everybody. Chuck, what are you doing?
Let's see. Well, this week I've been playing the first episode of Season 2 of Sam & Max, which I think everyone in the office can tell that I'm enjoying so far because I've been laughing quite a bit while playing it. And I also started playing Mass Effect on 360 because rumor has it that hopefully eventually it will be coming to the PC, so I wanted to check it out. I'm pretty early on in the game, so I can't say too much about it yet, but you know, so far so good.
It's not even out yet.
BioWare's RPGs have you know, eventually migrated to the PC, you know, sooner or later. So I'm going to wait that one out.
OXM gave that one a 10.
Yeah, and I guess Paul Corthoy says it's the best RPG he's ever played. So
best game he's ever played.
Really?
Really? Is that were those his words?
Those are his words to me.
Wow. Holy for holy. Yeah.
But yeah, that's a pretty good endorsement. So I'm looking forward to it. I love what BioWare does. Norm, what are you playing?
What have I been playing? It's a good question. I don't know. Team Fortress 2. A lot of Team Fortress 2. Call of Duty 4 multiplayer. Binged on that for about a week and a half. I think I'm going to start Assassin's Creed just because I can't wait for the PC version. I just picked that up today. And next week there's a glut of games coming out. I'm glad that I already beat Crysis or already went through Crysis, so I don't have to play through it now because I'm holding out for Rock Band and saving my time for Super Mario Galaxy.
Logan.
Well, now that I've finished Crysis, I am moving on to Painkiller Overdose and also Call of Duty 4.
Now, Logan, if you need any help at all with Painkiller Overdose, Call of Duty 4,
or Call
don't
Duty,
hesitate to call me, and I'll try to walk you through it.
I don't know who Crank called you last night, but I'm sorry about that.
For the record, there was a missed call on my cell phone this morning from Logan. He didn't leave a message, though. So I guess he tried to...
I lost my cell phone last night, and somebody must have started calling everybody hysterically. Mm-hmm. I can't control what thieves do. No control over that.
Jeremy, what are you playing?
A lot, actually. I've been playing, obviously, Team Fortress 2 with you guys. Norm made me get into a game of Call of Duty 4 multiplayer, which I'm glad he did because I wanted to give it a shot, but it just did not grab me at all. It was just so much... It's so fast-paced, you die so quickly. And I understand Norm's been playing for hours, and he still dies as quickly as when we started. So I don't... What do you see in that game so much, Norm?
It feels like a real war. I mean, I'm very... It takes skill, and I don't mind dying because I feel like more so than the single player game that I'm immersed in, like, you know, modern warfare as, you know, TV has portrayed it.
Norm just regrets that he has but infinite lives to give to his country.
I actually like the mission types where it is you die and then you're out for the rest of the game. That does feel more realistic to me. And
well, that's something that Counter-Strike's always done, yeah. You know, and they have a mode, that, like the search and destroy mode, that's kind of like a plant the bomb in Counter-Strike. But my favorite mode is the headquarters mode, which, the way Call of Duty, the series, their multiplayer maps have been designed, it's very circular, so there's no one end of the map. You fight in circles, so your team spawns in one area, but then once everyone dies, you're going to spawn in another area, and the other team is going to be in the opposite side of the map, so you're constantly chasing each other. But there are plenty of little paths in between the map where you can, you know, flank people, and then, you know, that's the fun part, just not following where your team's going, but going the opposite direction, and then flanking the team from the other direction.
Now, Jeremy, you were telling me that you had gotten back into Crysis and enjoyed it more this time, the demo.
Yeah, I went back, I played through the demo again, and I had been playing on medium the first time, and it's a big improvement if you go to high, so if anybody's checking out only on medium, definitely check out high, because something about the game takes a new life, I have to admit, and so the graphics are just really, really stunning, and I also experimented more with changing the firing type, so you get just the one bullet instead of the automatic, which that's actually very helpful. You seem to do more damage that way.
It's easier to get headshots.
Yep. Yeah. You know, it's not quite grabbing me, because in the demo at least, it's just the same four bases of Koreans, and you do the exact same thing over and over again. So I wish there were more variety. But
you don't have to do the same thing over and over again. You can take it from it, you know, use a different tactic.
I try, but I still think, like, the AI is just whack. It's either really, really stupid or really, really smart. Like, they can see you if you're prone in the grass from 200 feet away, which makes no sense. They always see me.
Maybe it's what you're wearing.
Yeah, I guess maybe I need to change my clothes.
I did have them spot me from a long distance away, which kind of annoyed me, because, you know, it's like if they I guess they do have peripheral vision, the AI does,
if they're facing your direction, then
if they happen to be facing your direction, they'll spot you from a long distance away, which kind of annoyed me. But if you're in some brush and you go prone, they won't spot you. I use that a lot.
Yeah,
I must be wearing tie dye. I don't know. But the highlight of my week by far is definitely Super Mario Galaxy, which is just everything I hoped it would be.
Cut his mic.
As somebody, Chuck, there's no shame in you buying that game, my man.
Yes, there is. Let's make no mistake about it.
Mine's in the mail right now.
Shame.
It is.
I can't wait to start playing it. You know, I'm of the Mario generation too. There's no shame in it.
It's like, you know, like Norm was talking about. He likes Call of Duty multiplayer because it feels like a real war, and talking about like realistic AI, like. Mario is the anti-realism game. I mean, it's like pure...
Well, you're playing this weekend, if you'd like me to bring you some cupcakes...
Dude...
be more than happy to do that.
That would be lovely.
You know, it's pure whimsy, and that is an absolutely good thing. It's something that, like, the games have forgotten in this quest for realism.
Pure whimsy?
Yeah.
So it's like pushing daisies?
Oh, dude.
oh, he did it! He got a reference
That would be a great band name, Pure Whimsy. But anyway...
Yeah,
I've just been enjoying.
Ladies and gentlemen, pure whimsy.
I have not played Mario Galaxy, but I'm getting all kinds of enjoyment out of it because Gaz has been going on and on about how much he loves it, and I've been giving him crap about it. So, I guess after he spent so much time complaining about the Crysis plot being cliched and being, you know, military guys chomping cigars, going all crazy over again about rescuing a princess.
Dude, no spoilers.
I didn't learn that anywhere. I didn't read anything about the game. It's just that you don't need a spoiler for a Mario game. They're always about rescuing a princess.
Is that why you don't play Mario games? Because it's about rescuing a princess? Have you missed the point of Mario games, that it's about the gameplay?
No,
like a woman.
I was giving Gaz crap about ripping on Crysis's plot and then going and playing a game and raving about a game that's about rescuing a princess.
I see.
I don't play Mario games because I like more complicated games, or they tend to be a little bit simplistic for me.
Dude, I have not been as frustrated as I've been with Mario in years. It's a highly complicated, frustrating game.
Well, they can be frustrating without being complicated. Well, there's a very different, very big difference there.
But there's the whimsy, man. The whimsy.
I like whimsy, but I don't like simplicity. I mean,
we should break out our game scores with whimsy, you know? Yeah. What's the whimsy factor?
This game, I'm sure, is going to have a lot of sparkle for me.
Yes.
Sunshine.
I give this a sparkle 9.
You know, sometimes after I finish playing a PC game that's, you know, like a shooter for hours on end, I come out and I'm kind of like a zombie. But when I finish playing Mario for hours, I'd feel elated. You know, I feel like a happier person. So maybe that's all what you guys need.
I could just
to
see
play,
the floating so. Hearts in Jeremy's living room, you know, and him skipping around and then the unicorns, you know, doing circles and figure eights in his lawn. La 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 la.
Just look at all the whimsy. To be fair, this is from the guy who spends his entire life playing Peggle. So,
well, that's true. That's very true.
That's different.
With Bjorn the Unicorn.
Well, hey Jeremy,
what are you trying to say about Bjorn?
Jeremy, on a completely different track, I do want to play UT3 with you because I played it a couple of weeks ago at an event here in San Francisco, and it's got that old, you know, UT 2004 Quake 3 feel for me, that sort of first-person shooter game that I really enjoyed playing online.
Yeah.
So I'd love to play it with you and have you kick my ass.
I like
that. After you're done eating your muffins and sitting on your tuffins.
You know, there's so much innovation going on this year that I was disappointed by the demo because it was so much of the old school, but maybe that'll be a nice distraction.
And Gaz, are you even still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, yeah. We're gonna have to drag a playlist out of you. Was it now? Have you just been quiet all this whole episode because I told you you couldn't talk about Mario Galaxy?
I've just been happy to listen. You know, if you don't have anything nice to say,
that's
what I was always taught.
So you've been sulking this entire time?
No, I've been listening. I've been experiencing what it's like to be a podcast in the podcast audience. But with the added bonus of being able to butt in whenever I feel like it. I just haven't felt like it.
So, guys, what have you been playing?
I've been playing Call of Duty 4, which has led me actually to take back...
Perhaps for this week's podcast. Thanks, everybody. And, sorry. All right. Okay, go ahead, Gary. Hey, let's hear it.
I'm going to retract some of the comments that I made about the demo. In the previous podcast, whenever that was, because I kind of ragged on the demo and said that I wasn't interested in the game, which is true. I didn't think the demo did a very good job, but the actual game is much, much better and led me to think that they should have made some smarter decisions with the demo. If they'd have taken that first SAS mission where you storm
the
ship,
if they
had made that the demo, I would have been all over it. I would have been singing a very different tune.
But how cool was it to play that as a surprise? You know, so that was still cool.
Yeah, no, I get it, and it's very, very good. I'm enjoying it a lot more. I've actually kind of stopped fairly early on now, though, because now the next mission is the demo mission. I'm like, oh, I really don't want to have to do that again. So I'm going to have to kind of slog through it, and hopefully the rest of the game will be better. So I've been playing that. I've been playing Team Fortress as usual. But the main thing for me has really been Super Mario. I have to echo everything Jeremy said. It's just absolutely magical. It's really the only word I can think of to describe it. It's just pure joy from beginning to end, and it really does kind of make you feel like a kid again. And you know, you just have a smile on your face the whole time that you're playing it. And I mean, they should take that game and use it as an example of it. Like, put it in a masterclass of level design to teach people how to design games, because it is absolutely astonishing. Every new world that you unlock, every new galaxy that you play is like something new, and you're like, Jesus Christ, how long can this game go and just still keep getting better and better all the way through? I'm pretty sure it's going to wind up in my top 5 games of all time by the end of this year.
Wow.
I hope there's as much crack in my game box as there was in yours. That sounds awesome.
That's what it is. It's pure gaming crack. That's what it's like.
You know, I'm just given hope by your retraction on Call of Duty that when you do play Crysis, I think you'll have the same reaction.
I'm not going to play Crysis, though, because no one's going to give me a free copy, and I'm certainly not going to buy it.
So jaded.
I got Call of Duty 4 because it showed up free on my Steam Press account. I wouldn't have bought it based on the demo at all. Because I could get it through Steam, I gave it another crack. Crysis obviously is not going to be showing up on Steam. I'm not going to pay $50 for it. So unless somebody wants to send me a copy, I don't see it getting another bite of the cherry with me.
Another what?
Whoa!
I don't know what that means. I'm not sure I want to.
It means you only get one chance to make a first impression, and Crysis blew it with me, and I'm not. You know, the object of a demo is to make you buy the game, and it failed, so I'm not going to buy the game. So, you know, unlike Call of Duty 4, where, you know, it was fortunate to get another shot, and I'll happily take back what I said. Crysis, yeah, I don't see how I'm going to get around. And this, even if I had a copy of it sitting here, between that and Mario and Call of Duty 4 and Rock Band and Mass Effect and everything else that's going on, it wouldn't. I don't see myself making the time for it.
Such hate. See, the Gaz thinks that I make fun of Super Mario Brothers because my inner child is dead. I think my inner child is alive and well. It says that my inner child wants a nano suit and his wants to jump around with happy stars. We just have very different inner children.
Your inner child wants to strangle North Koreans.
You know, in all seriousness, like you visualize your inner child in terms of the clothing it wears or the accoutrements that it has, and not the fun that it's actually having engaging with the game. That's the problem with what you just said.
That's
the difference. Is yeah. I feel pretty confident in saying that if just in terms of kind of pure game design quality, Mario just curb stomps Crysis into the ground. But you won't play it because you don't like the vibe of it.
It's not that I don't like the vibe of it. I mean, I played Mario games when I was a kid. I mean, I went up to the Super Nintendo, and that was the last console I owned, and I had the Mario games for that. I enjoyed it, but like I said, kind of simplistic. And also, the really weird Japanese stuff just turns me off. I mean, it's like, why is he a plumber? Can anyone explain that to me? Why is he a plumber? And what's with the walking mushrooms and the I just don't get it. I'm not saying it's bad. I just don't get it. It's too weird for me.
You're a soulless husk of a human.
It's truly.
You're like the kind of guy that would come out of Ratatouille going, I don't get it. Why? How was the rat able to talk? Rats can't cook
Ratatouille.
In real life. I was not able to enjoy this movie because realistic enough.
Yeah, I did wonder about that.
DJ,
the rat had a nano suit.
DJ, you need to refer to the last verse of the Mystery Science Theater theme song. I think that's what you need.
That hurt.
But Mystery Science Theater has a premise that sort of makes sense. Sort of. I mean, if you don't think about it, it sort of makes sense. If you don't even have to not think about Mario for it to not be crazy, out of control, makes no sense. And that some people like that. That's fine. It just doesn't work for me. Is all I'm saying. You know, I don't get. Why there are mushrooms everywhere? It's too weird in Japanese.
Did you not watch the Super Mario movie? Glow. The mushrooms are fungus. They've invaded.
I did watch that.
The
yes.
kingdom, and they have giant rocket boots that help them jump really high.
There was a movie.
Was a movie.
Yeah.
I knew that.
And
John Leguizamo as Luigi.
As Luigi. Yeah, that was hilarious. And in one of the worst movies ever made, sort of way. And like the Goombas were like dinosauric people.
It wasn't a good movie, but I'm actually kind of curious to go back and watch it. I only ever
totally
saw it once when
it
first came out, and it's like I'm sure there's kind of a camp quality
Yoshi
to
was
it.
A velociraptor.
It's pretty trippy.
And Dennis Hopper as King Cooper or Bowser, whoever
yeah,
was
yeah.
he played that guy.
Yep.
The fungus was the king.
I think we can all agree though that the princess needs saving,
and Megatron must be stopped.
I just want to hear Jeremy say again what you said about Transformers last night.
You guys had this debate whether or not Transformers was any good, and I actually know somebody who thought it was the best movie this summer. So I Netflixed it and I watched the first 45 minutes and it was back in the envelope and in the mailbox.
it definitely was a chore to sit through.
See, if you'd watched the last 45 minutes, I think you would have been much happier.
Only if you had fast-forwarded anything where they were actually talking.
Yeah, just the last 45 minutes is fine.
There was plenty of talking in that.
The girl who plays the high school student, who's actually 21 years old, she's pretty easy on the eyes, I will say that.
No, there is no
disputing. Yeah, but in such a kind of over-the-top obvious way, though. Like, there was nothing... It was too much.
That movie lacked any subtlety.
How about that Australian hacker chick?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about her.
Yes, yes.
The comedy fat hacker that you gotta have.
Yeah, Yeah.
You notice how many movies this summer got solved because, you know, somebody knew the best hacker in the world? Yeah. It was really convenient.
Whether it's Kevin Smith or superfluous character number 7 in the case of Transformers. But anyway, we should wrap this up because we've got to record the episode for next week because we're all going to be off eating turkey. So, no eating turkey. Are you going to like play Rock Band on your drumstick? Is that what you're going to do?
Play Rock Band with drumsticks.
Concept.
Greasy. Okay. So that'll do it for this particular episode. For myself, Chuck Osborne, Logan Decker, Norm Chan, Gary Whitta, and Jeremy Williams. We'll see you next time.
Chuck, is that your mic boom again?
Yeah, I was actually adjusting my headset. So.
Okay.
Jesus Christ.
I'll stop doing that now.
Well, when I ask, can you hear me now? Can you tell me if you
now can hear
me?
Now we can hear you.
I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah. Because I was asking, can anyone hear me now? And Chuck's sitting right there and telling me. Okay.
You got to tell DJ when you can hear him right when you hear him, bro. He gets pissed.
He gets very busy. Yes.
Or, you know, within... You know, 30 seconds would be nice.
We did, dude. We just heard you when you said that when we responded.
Right.
I've observed an interesting economic phenomenon here in the Philippines I call the Jollibee Syndrome. I've chosen the name Jollibee from the fast food chain that's been so widely successful as a business venture here.
What are you talking about?
We had a Jollibee experience at the mall. Have you heard of Jollibee?
No. Is that what we're going to talk about on the podcast?
Maybe. It's a cost-effective fast food chain that sells burgers, chicken, and spaghetti. That's apparently terrible. It's like it's owned by a bunch of people, immigrants from the Philippines, and their burgers have pineapple in them, which isn't so bad. But like the spaghetti has like hot dogs in it.
Nice.
But there's a grand opening at the mall today. And we went by, and we saw a sign for it, and Chuck was explaining what Jollibee was, because I'd never heard of it. And as we were going down the escalator, we saw the Jollibee, like their mascot, in costume, waving at us. It's kind of frightening.
I can imagine.
Chuck was a little Chuck was overwhelmed.
Oh. No. No.
Okay.
Yeah, that's just a bad thing. But yeah, we had no indication.
See the unrelated Spider-Man. Note. When did the Woodoff begin?
Last night.
That was last night.
Midnight, my brother.
Oh my goodness.
Who's tapping? Gaz.
Yes, I'm typing.
Can you not?
Okay. I'll move my microphone while you
there
talk.
At least he didn't mute his headset while I'm talking.
Besides that,
Hang on for one second. Norm, stop unwrapping Assassin's Creed. I can hear that. Stop it.
He's unwrapping Kanan Lynch, actually.
Oh, whatever. Stop unwrapping things.
Jesus.
I was practicing unwrapping Assassin's Creed on Kanan Lynch.
We just kept hearing...
Noise pollution.
Control yourself, man.
We can't even stop our podcast to stop gaming.
Ha ha ha.